Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery. Today we're talking with urban root worker Stephanie Paul.
Plus, we'll have our witchcraft and spelled out segments.
And we've got a few thank yous that we'd like to share as well.
All right. Well, we thought we would start today. We've had this just phenomenal outpouring of love and support and just a lot of really positive feedback on both the blog and the podcast at the iTunes page is primarily what I'm thinking of.
Yes. So
we wanted to take a few minutes just to show some appreciation to those folks who have been, you know, really active and supportive of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one that comes to mind immediately is a Firelight's review on
we iTunes. Firelight!
You should see. Which we can almost, like, post the email I sent to Corey. I think the title of the email was all caps, "Holy shit, look at this!"
Yeah, it's like it's this glowing review, and like
my jaw just dropped. It was so awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was really awesome, Firelight. And we, you know, we love Firelight Show as well. I know I listen to it. It's one of the first ones I look for every week when I do my iTunes updating. So it was just sort of this out of the blue thing that, you know, somebody that I listen to and I'm all like, "I really love this podcast," was like, "I really love your podcast."
Yeah, it was great.
It was like finding out your high school crush had a crush on you too, and exchanging notes at the lunch table. It was really great.
Do you like me? Check yes or no.
I know. It's a big check yes. So yeah, very cool. Thank you very much, Firelight.
And of course, we'd like to thank Velma Nightshade, who gave us
an awesome little glowing review on her show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome. Because she's another one that I listen to. Mm-hmm. Like every week I'm like, "Where's Velma? Where's Velma?" So this is very cool. So thank you, Velma. We've also had just some really good posts in general on that iTunes page as well. Some of the other names are, let's see, from his name was Harold, Moonlight Meadow, Teen Dude 4554, Priestess in Kansas City, who I believe she's also the official sponsor of our show. She's given us a donation before.
Yes,
and
which was awesome.
Has been really, really supportive of us.
Yeah, we were able to use that for the contest, the giveaway.
Yeah.
So that was very cool. Thank you.
So it was awesome, awesome stuff.
Let's see. Okay. Ginger 2177.
I think that's Genus Hazard. Or Geno's Hazard, perhaps. And I don't know this fella's name. It looks like Gaines Hat. It could also be Gaines Shat. I know it's awful.
I'm not laughing at your name.
You're laughing at my complete inability to understand his name.
It's just funny.
So please feel free to tell us exactly how your name is pronounced. But yeah, we, you know, got some really great responses.
Yeah.
Oh.
Also, Curious Little Mouse and Leon, is that what that is? 919.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you to all of those for the iTunes reviews. It's very flattering.
We just love it. Like, I know some people get really into the Podcast Alley ratings and everything. And honestly, Podcast Alley frustrates the tar out of me because like anything that gets registered there seems to get lost for me.
Well, I can never find us on there. Like if you search New World Witcher, you can't, it won't bring us up. You
exactly.
have to like go through
our link basically.
Yeah.
Although now we are showing up on the rankings under religion and spirituality.
Okay, that's
so
good.
If you just go to that page, you can find us there. But that's just, it is like, that's because it's so frustrating. A lot of times I don't check it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, being the incredibly egotistical narcissist that I am, I check the iTunes thing every time I log on to iTunes.
I do too.
So we love, I mean, it's just so neat to have that kind of
feed
support.
Feed our egos.
They're hungry, hungry egos.
Okay, sorry, but seriously, yeah. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And also the commenters on the blog.
Yes, I'm going to try and just go through these names really quickly. There's so many of you all, and you're all just awesome. Like, we have such awesome discussions on that blog.
Yeah, we really do. Oh, that actually, go ahead and read that, and then I'd like to say something. So
absolutely. Okay. Just real quick, I'm going to run through. Let's see. Of course, we've got Juniper from
of course
Standing Stone Garden Gate, and she's had some really excellent posts. Mm-hmm. Kathy, you've had some excellent questions. Oraya the Sphinx from Mediastra Octera. We
love Oraya.
Yeah, lots of exchanges there. Emily, Chet, who's had some cool questions.
Yeah, and he recently wrote a really long response to me, I guess, sort of about like the last episode, the relationships, and about our, you know, our relationships with our respective partners. And yeah, that was just, it's really cool to hear you're not alone in that, you know. So
yeah,
that was awesome. So thank you, Chet.
Yeah, very cool. Jay, who I've been having a fun art discussion with, she's great. Saturn from Pennies in the Well, mm-hmm. who has just blogged all over our blog, but we love it. We love it. It's great. Jay Escalé from Witchery of One has been great. Suze, Alicia has had some great comments. Annika has had some amazing comments. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but Hoysum, who also runs a blog, very, very interesting stuff there. She said some good stuff. Polani Bride? Paul Annie Bride? I don't know how to say your name, but you've had some nice comments too. So. Ginger, who I think is the same Ginger that did our iTunes.
I'm sure, yeah.
A lot of fun. Blue Druid, who, again, has a really cool blog. Sarah at Crooked Ways, who this past week nominated us for a blogger award.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. So thank you, Sarah. Michael, who is one of the root workers I listed in our, yeah, did you see on that root workers post, like some of the commenters, we've had Michael, who mm-hmm. was listed as one of the root workers to check out on the blog, and, no small amount of pride on my part, but, Miss Catherine Ironwood.
Yes, that was very cool.
That was really awesome. Minako, or probably Minako, because I think she's using a Japanese pronunciation there. Laurel from Nefaria, who has a really neat looking blog. If you ever want to check that out, it's got some really cool artistic stuff going on.
Cool.
Simon 14, that might also be Simon 14, who, as far as I know, is our primary French language listener and reader. So he said some great stuff to say to us. Catherine, Odom of the Evil Eye, who's a great name and some good comments as well. Fairy Cat, as well, has had some good comments. So, all, to all of you, and I'm sure I've missed a couple in there, too.
Papa Toadbone.
Oh, of course. How could I forget Papa Toadbone? who's had just amazing, basically blogging all over our blog like Saturn does. But it's really good stuff. So, to all of you.
Yeah, we appreciate.
Thank you.
Each and every one of you, definitely.
It's awesome.
So, with that said, I would like to take this moment.
Coffee and, with Lane.
Exactly. Well, I just wanted to kind of let mainly the blog commenters know and the blog readers, because I'm sure, you know, we have a few people who only listen to the podcast and they're like, eh, the blog, take it or leave it, whatever. That's fine. But, I don't know. It is very much Corey's blog, which is very, very cool with me because I don't really have the time for it or the scholarliness.
the book learning?
Yeah, the book learning of Corey's to put into it. We've said this several times on the podcast before, like, you know, you are very... Well, I mean, we're both like to read, we're both bookish, but you retain knowledge like a sponge. And I'm just more, I don't want to use the word flighty about myself, but.
No, it's not even that. It's much more of a, like, I get really into writing, like, academic style mm-hmm. writing,
And I want the blog to keep that academic style, and mm-hmm. I feel like if I were to contribute a lot, it wouldn't necessarily have that. I would like to write some about for it, mm-hmm. you know, but. I have to find some topics that I can...
Right.
I think part of my problem is I don't feel comfortable writing about some things. I feel like I'm an imposter or something like that.
Mm.
But anyway, that's
something She's totally a poser, folks.
For Corey and I to discuss. But I just want you to know that I do read every single comment on the blog, and I try to reply as much as I can, especially when Corey was down with the swamp virus.
And my swamp virus. Well, thank you, by the way, to everybody who had that outpouring of support.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy here, so we really appreciate it. Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for the comments. I do read them, even though I'm more of a behind-the-scenes person, while Corey is, you know, the front of the blog. You know, I am there Mm-hmm. You know, so.
And I mean, she and I exchange emails all the time.
Yeah.
You know, talking about what's been going on the blog. So she really is reading these things and getting into them. It's just, I think that sometimes it's harder for you to articulate a response to it. And then to be fair, a lot of times I'll already have responded to, like, everything.
Yeah, so. Which is fine. Like, you know, I'm not, like, mad about any of this or anything like that. I just want people to know that I am there on the blog, just not with as much of a presence. So, you know. Anyway.
The silent partner.
Yeah, there we go.
The shadow figure. The one lurking. She's really pulling the strings, folks. She's the puppet master.
No, whatever. I don't want people to think that you're, like, a really good ventriloquist.
Yeah. There is no such person as lame people. This is all very clever editing in a really good GarageBand loop.
That's right. Just me laughing.
Yes. Oh, goodness.
Anyway, so
again, we're just really happy for all of you listeners and readers, and we really appreciate your support. So we wanted to thank you for that, and we're going to continue trying to make improvements to the show and do new things. You may have noticed we've got a new intro on this particular episode. We hope you like that. We'll probably be making other changes as well as time goes on. We're finally in the double digits, episode number 10.
Woohoo!
So we're looking forward to where we're going.
Definitely. Up next is an interview with Stephanie. And then
we'll be on to our witchcraft and spelled out segments after that. Hopefully you'll enjoy this episode.
Hi, I'm J.O. Scully, host of Witchery of One, a periodic, that is to say, infrequent podcast that focuses on the experiences, practices, and opinions of one witch, me. Episodes can be found for download at my blog page, which is witcheryofone.libsyn.com, or you can do a search in iTunes. Stay tuned. You just might hear something new. And all blessings be.
Standing Stone
and Garden Gate,
a podcast for
artistic and creative,
intelligent and philosophizing,
crafty and practical,
deep thinking,
hardworking
pagans
and witches.
Visit StonegatePodShow.net
or else.
All right, we have with us tonight for our interview Stephanie, who is a fantastic and wonderful conjure woman. I say that from some degree of personal experience because she, in fact, was my teacher.
Ooh. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. So everything I know about hoodoo, I owe to her.
And subsequently me as well. So
by proxy.
So thanks for being with us tonight.
I'm happy to be with you.
All right. So Stephanie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, who you are and kind of what you do. What's your witchy M.O. mojo?
Okay. Well, I am a practicing root worker, and I've been a practicing root worker now for about 5 or 6 years. Prior to that, I practiced traditional witchcraft for about 20. And I fell into the realm of hoodoo because I am Southern. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and it felt very natural to me, and it was things that I did anyway. My great-grandmother on my mother's side was a granny woman in Appalachia, North Carolina, and a lot of the things that I had learned from her over the years, just picking up various little tidbits here and there, seemed to correspond really well with the things that I would do on my own. And then I didn't know it, but I later found out that it was actually hoodoo or conjure.
Neat.
That's really cool. So can you talk about a little bit of what you learned from her, like some of the little things you picked up?
Oh, okay. Mostly it was herbalism. Every time that she would come and visit us, she would bring her mortar and pestle, and she would bring different capsules. And I always thought that they were pills that she was taking, but they were actually capsules that she made of various herbs. And she would actually open them up and grind things down and mix things together. And what I primarily learned from her was the medicinal aspects of her herbs and roots. Although at the time I thought it was more medicinal, it wound up, as I learned more, it wound up being more about the magical aspect. For example, one of the things that she would bring with her would be lemongrass in capsules, in capsule form. And she would use that, and I thought that she was taking them, but she would actually take the herbs out of it, and she would actually sprinkle our yard with it, and I had no idea what that would be for, you know, other than grass. I mean, you know, when you're a kid, you see, oh, that's grass, so it's like grass seed. She's planting grass or something like that, right. You know. But she actually did that because my parents were kind of at odds most of the time, and lemongrass is a very famous love herb.
Oh. So
that's
she
awesome.
Would do that to bring more love between my parents because she loved my dad, and she wanted to see my parents get along more. So that's just one of the little things that she would do.
That's great.
That is so cool.
Later, awesome. I also found out that lemongrass is very potent in the sexual department, but you know, you never want to think of your parents in that aspect. So no. I still try to block that out. It's repressed.
No, they, parents have had sex exactly as many number of times as they have children. That's how that works.
So they've had once.
That's it. That's really cool. So did she, you know, at her house, was her house kind of witchy? Did you ever get like like were there herbs hanging all over the place or anything like that?
Oh yeah. She was big on hanging lavender. That was probably the main thing. Anytime that I would go into her house, it always smelled like lavender. And I always sort of equated that to, like old people because I didn't know what lavender really smelled like. I just assumed.
It covers up the old person stink.
when I got into herbalism and, you know, I had lavender myself, I'd say, oh, this smells like my great grandmother's house. Oh, that's what that was. But she had an amazing house in North Carolina, and it's still in my family. My uncle currently owns it, and my mother actually lives next door to it. But it was built in the mid-1800s, and it was just the picturesque little cottage that you would think of when you would think of hedge witchery. So she had, you know, bee balm growing outside, and of course she had lavender and all kinds of herbs. And then when you go in, she would have various things around. She'd have the horseshoes, and of course she'd have her cast iron pots or her cast iron skillets on the wall, which I always thought was just to save space and counter space, but now looking back, I know that that was for other reasons because it was right by her door. So it's little things like that. But yeah, her house was just, it was absolutely amazing. And of course it still is. When my uncle moved in, he kind of changed some things around, but he did leave some things there as well. But it was just a very nice little place to visit. And it always felt warm going in there. And it was probably one of the, as far as my draw to aesthetics, as far as, you know, the whole, you know, Sophia saying, picture it, Sicily, it's, you know, picture it, North Carolina. It, where that all came in for me, it always goes back to her house in North Carolina. So I really enjoyed it. And I hope one day, if I'm in my uncle's good graces, maybe I might just inherit it. I hope.
That'd be awesome.
I think maybe you need to sprinkle some powder around his yard.
Oh, yeah. Move out.
Yeah.
Move out. Sell it to me.
That is really cool. Now, was she, more of the Gullah style practice or more of the mountain practice?
Hers was more of the mountain practice. Mm-hmm. She was raised in the mountains, and I honestly never really thought much about it because from a religious standpoint, she was a devout Pentecostal. Mm-hmm. So I never really would have put one and one together. And I honestly didn't put one and one together until maybe 5 or 6 years ago. So I had no idea. But yeah, her practice was primarily, it was primarily mountain. It was primarily herbal in nature. And of course, it was all things that were well planted in North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So it there was like no hag riding with her or anything like that. Although the folks out in Appalachia did adapt that too, but it was just more of a witchery thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you still work with her at all? Do you with ancestor work, do you ever call on her?
Oh yeah. Oh, I do. I call on her all the time. She passed away in 2000, and she was 90 when she passed, and she was taken to Burlington, which is in Central North Carolina. And I actually had the honor of being with her her last night. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I very seldom got to see her because she lived in North Carolina and I was born and raised in Tennessee. And we would go out there several times while I was growing up, but not a whole lot. But I went out there to be with her while she was dying, and we had a special connection. Everybody in the family had said that I looked just like her when she was my age. And I never knew who I looked like as a kid because, you know, everybody said, oh, you look like your mom, you look like your dad. But I actually looked just like her. Mm-hmm. And for some reason that night, you know how sometimes you just know something's going to happen? Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't necessarily call it clairvoyance, but I knew that that was going to be it for her. She had started talking in tongues, which I knew was, that's pretty normal for a Pentecostal woman to do, but she would talk about dead relatives and, you know, she would start going through lists and lists of names, and they'd given her morphine and it wasn't kicking in. And so I just knew that that was going to be it for her. And I actually called my mom and my aunt, who were maybe 20 minutes away. And I told them, you know, this is it for her. I honestly think that she's not going to be with us by morning. And, they both said, no, she's been doing that for about a week now. It'll be okay. And so I stayed with her and, held her hand. And sure enough, the next morning, about 7 o'clock, she passed away. So I think that what the two of us experienced, you know, that last night for her in the hospital, I think that it created a certain bond between the two of us. And I still feel that bond to this day. So when I do ancestor work, I certainly call upon her.
Mm. It's nice. It sounds like she's a really great ally to have.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. She didn't have an enemy in the world. Everybody loved her. She was an amazing woman.
Mm. She sounds like it for sure. So you have the granny practices in your background, and you got into hoodoo, but you have a very specific focus, yes, as far as your hoodoo goes. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, sure. As a traditionalist, I guess, as you would say, I really like to focus on the traditional aspects of my own practice. And in hoodoo, back in the day, you know, we're talking mid-1800s, early 1900s, there were certain things that were available to people in the South that are not available today. There are certain roots, the Adam and Eve root, for example, which was widely available to folks in the South back then. You know, they're endangered now. They're going to be extinct before too long. So one thing that I had run into when I first started practicing was it wasn't always feasible to get a hold of the traditional items that one would need to do their conjure practice, which is kind of ironic considering when hoodoo first came about, the items that were used in the practice were things that the slaves particularly could readily get their hands on and use. They were everyday items to them, because mm-hmm. they certainly didn't have a shop that they could go down to and collect items that they couldn't, you know, have strange little brews and potions of craziness as it would appear to their masters. They had to use everyday items in their practice. And that's sort of the basis of what hoodoo is. Well, those items are really not as readily available for us today.
Right.
So my main objective is to show people that you can take items that are available to you here and now and incorporate it into a traditional conjure practice. So my main goal is to show the urban root worker, the root worker that lives in the city as opposed to the country who can't necessarily go out and, you know, harvest wildcraft herbs and roots so that they are able to obtain items on their own easily, relatively easily, and have a conjure practice if that's what draws them.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Can you give us some examples of that? Like, would that be like using glass from like a car crash for, you know, separation work, things like that?
Oh yeah, sure. Sure. Let me try to think of something that I did recently for someone. Okay. Perfect example. I taught a workshop last weekend at the Spirit of the Earth Church's Beltane Festival. on love work and sex tricks, whatnot, you know, Beltane, the randy time of the year. I had a woman approach me afterwards, and her main issue was she is divorced. Her ex-husband is a Baptist preacher.
Sounds like fun already.
Wonderful. Nice and wonderful that that is. And she has a problem. She's been having a problem with him talking to the kids, telling the kids that she's going to go to hell. And because, you know, she practices, I think she practices, and the kids are very upset about that because her oldest is a girl and her daughter has been wanting to get into these practices. And the father is just, he's just not civil with her at all. He's just, he's horrible. And she wanted to know something that she could do to get him to lighten up, you know, release some of that anger and bitterness and everything that he'd been throwing at her. And of course, naturally, you know, they're divorced, they have kids. She can't just get rid of him. And of course, that's always generally the last thing that, you know, throwing powders at someone like goofer dust, hot foot powder, something to make someone move away. That's typically a last resort in my mind anyway. But that's not even an option for her because right. He's going to have to be in her life because right. of the kids. So I had to think about it for a while, but the option that I came up with for her that would be easy for her to get, and so it's something that she could do to where people would not know that that's what, you know, that it's a blatant form of witchcraft or conjure, would be a honey jar spell. And of course, I told her that she needed to get something of his from him. And one of the things, I guess, since he talked so much, mm-hmm. was to get, you know, he also smokes. So I told her to get one of his cigarettes. People smoke. Of course, that's not exactly something that they would have used 100 years ago.
Right.
But I told her to take cigarette butts, of course, which he throws on the ground, which, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But I told her to take cigarette butts. And I also told her to, you know, a few herbs to gather and to wrap them up in a packet, write her petition out, put them in a packet, put them in the honey jar, and to put the honey jar in a sunny spot in her house, in hopes that he will sweeten up to her, which is the purpose of the honey. One thing that, one of the main reasons why I love hoodoo so much is it's, you do get the opportunity to be creative, and it's also a little bit of critical thinking, because the items that you use would be common sense items. The honey is a perfect example to sweeten another person up to you. Honey is sweet, mm-hmm. and it's sticky. So that was the solution for that particular person. And then, of course, I had a client, an actual client about a year ago, who is in a relationship, or we'll say relationship. He's in another relationship with someone else. But she was wanting him to leave the other woman and be with her, and wanted to know, you know, what could she do to get him with her. And of course, the first thing that pops into my mind is to get a piece of his clothing and bury it near her front door.
You didn't tell her to stab a dove with a straight pin?
No, I didn't want to go practical magic on her. That might have freaked her out just a little bit.
Okay, so you also, got...
I love that movie, though. Favorite movie of all time.
It's a pretty great movie. So, okay, so you had her bury some of his clothing?
Yes, but I put a little spin on it. I told her to, I made a packet for her, a bath sachet, and sent it to her, and told her to take a bath with a sachet in the bath water, and then afterwards to, when she was draining the bath water, to get a gallon jug, fill it up, and to take that and pour it, because he lives in Atlanta, she lives in Nashville, she was only seeing him every once in a while. And when I told her about the burying of the clothing, she said, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, you know, get something of his without him saying, hey, where did such and such go? You know, where did my boxers go? I know they were here. So, yeah. That although, you know, nice. Get him drunk enough. But, yeah. Hey, I stop at nothing. You know, there are no limits. That's another thing I love about hoodoo. There are no rules, so to speak. You have to let your own moral compass guide you, and some people don't have a very good moral compass.
I know, but I had pants when I went in that bar last night.
Yeah, exactly. Say, you know, you just get someone drunk. But I told her to take the bath and to go to wherever he was staying. He was staying in a hotel. So I figured, well, you know, in theory, you would want to go where the person lives. But since he lives in Atlanta, that was not going to be feasible. So I told her to go to his hotel and go to wherever his car was, because his car would be a part of him. And she could pour it from his car to a road, and not to necessarily go into the road with it, but to at least go that far, and then to go home, and then to pour it from that road and pour it up to her doorstep. And I told her to save some of it, and after, you know, they had their relations, to take it, and if she could get an item of clothing, to take it, to pour some more of the bathwater on it, and then to tie it up into a packet, put it in a box, and then bury that under her doorstep or by her doorstep near her front door. Which she did, and she let me know, you know, a few months later, yes, it worked, yes, he left her. Or he didn't leave her, he left
the other woman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had plans of moving back to Nashville, which was awesome. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
But with, there's a lot of issues that people get into, you know, wanting to practice conjure in the modern world. And one of my favorite examples would be to, back then, you know, people had dirt floors, people had wooden porches, they had places to bury things. And in this day and age, a lot of the people that have come to me say, well, you know, I live in an apartment, or, you know, I only have, mm-hmm. I have a concrete patio, I can't bury it under my doorstep. So my favorite solution for that is to take a flower pot. And if you need to bury something, to bury it in the flower pot, put your flowers on top of it, and put that by your door.
Mm.
That'll like be that. One of the tips in the book. But,
ooh, speaking of, do you want to tell us a little bit about that project?
Okay. I have been working up to writing a book now for a while. And Corey, as you know, being a member of the coven, you know that I've taken a step back from my role as high priestess this year to concentrate on personal projects. And one of those being a book that I've been planning on writing for a while. And it's tentatively titled The Urban Root Worker's Guide to Traditional Southern Conjure. And in it will be different tips and tricks to be able to incorporate those old world style conjure tricks and be able to employ them in the new era that we're in.
Sort
this
of
wonderful
them.
Concrete jungle that we live in.
That's awesome.
I'll buy it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That's great.
If we just crack it open and get started.
Yeah, that's. It sounds like it's going to be, I don't know, I just really love that idea, especially the sort of city dwellers aspect of it, you know?
Yeah.
Because where I live is, you know, it's out in the country, but at the same time, I spend a lot of time in the city.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, we're both in subdivisions, so it can feel really...
very city yet country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really like that idea of the water in the jug and pouring around the car and then, you know, back to the street. That's just...
You look like you've got a devious way to use that somehow.
No, I can't think of any way to, you know, any... time I would need that anytime soon, but
who's pissed Lane off lately?
It's just, you know, it's good to have in your bag of tricks, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's so many things that, you know, we could be doing to adapt. And of course, hoodoo is a growing practice. It's not meant to be static at all times. And of course, with the way that the times have gone, we can't afford to, you know, do the things that we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we live in a different time now. We have different things that are available to us, and we have obstacles that were not present back then. So we have to creatively find a way around it.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a forum that I'm on where somebody was talking about recently. There's this phenomenon of doing freezer spells for the shut your mouth spells.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it used to be that you could get a cow's tongue anywhere you wanted because that was, you know, go into a butcher shop, you can get a cow's tongue.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to find that now, but everybody has a freezer. So
They
totally just sort of switched out one for the other, and now you use the freezer to do the shutting somebody up spell.
Yep.
So, yeah, I can totally see the validity of that. And like I said, I'll buy that book. So.
Yeah, you have two customers right here.
Sweet.
Two pre-orders.
So when you publish it, not if, but when, we should do like a giveaway of it.
Totally.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, rock on.
I'm all for it.
Cool.
I'll be in on that.
All right. Well, cool. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Do you have any final thoughts, any words of wisdom for our eager audience?
Oh, I have no wisdom. The wisest man knows that he knows absolutely nothing.
All right, that's fair.
All right.
I can get with that. So that's what you've learned tonight, folks. Nothing. Absolutely.
Absolutely nothing. Everything is completely and totally objective. So if anybody would like to get a hold of me for any reason, any needs of help, I will say that I do have a line of Conjure products. I sell them at Etsy, and also for Nashville folk, I sell it, my line at Goddess in the Moon on 8th Avenue. And I do take on clients, and when I do tricks for clients, it's very important for me to point out that I do not charge for my time to do those. I charge for supplies and shipping only if I have to ship. There are so many people out there that are looking to make a quick buck, and it kind of upsets me, because being gifted with, you know, certain abilities should come with a price of service to your fellow man. So that is something that I and my magical partner, Jack Montgomery, who hopefully you guys can get on your show one of these days, that's something that we both like to let people know.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody would like to get in touch with me, they can certainly get on my website.
What's that website?
It is musiccitymojo.org.
Excellent. And we'll have that in the show notes. It's also one of our sidebar links on mm-hmm. the webpage. So people will be able to get in touch with you. And I expect you'll have a sudden rush of clients from appearing on our tiny little podcast. So, again, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Oh, well, thank you for having me, Corey. You know, it's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure talking to you, too. So
thanks.
All right. So I guess after this, we're going to be...
we'll have a little promo, I think a special custom-made promo.
Yes.
So fantastic. And we'll be back after that.
Yep.
All right.
You've crossed the ocean and entered the new world with Corey and Lane on their down-home show, New World Witchery. Once you've gotten to the point where you can't tell hoodoo from Scooby-Doo, trade in the dirt and dolls for a torch and pitchfork and come join me, Firelight, at Inciting a Riot, the podcast. We'll be inciting all sorts of riots in areas such as religion, mainstream news, and living a modern, magical middle-class life. You can find the riot at incitingariot.com or through iTunes. But for now, get back to Corey and Lane before they take me to the crossroads. Those two can do some crazy things with some paper clips, chicken bones, and two-day-old donuts. Do not cross them.
So that was a custom-made promo from Firelight over at Inciting a Riot. And I love it. I think it's so fun.
Me too. The first time I heard it, I was rolling. It was so funny.
It makes it sound like the MacGyver of the magical world.
MacGruber.
Yeah, much more like the MacGruber of the magical world. But that's really cool. I just think it's really fun to have that level of support in the community.
Thank you, Firelight.
So you rock. All right. So we hope you enjoyed that interview with Stephanie. I have learned so much from her.
Mm-hmm.
She's just really given me a lot of knowledge and a lot of direction. And so I've learned a lot from her. And I don't know. I think it would be fun to sort of talk a little bit about what she had mentioned as far as, you know, being in the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does impact your magical practice. And I noticed that, you know, there's a lot of people who, you know, they really want to be doing magical practice, but they feel like the only way they can, you know, be a magical person is to have a little cottage out in the middle of the woods with a, you know, enclosed garden. And I don't know. I think that when you really get down to it, there's a lot of magic to be found in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about that? How does magic in the city work for you?
Well, I mean, I'm not really in the city per se. Like, you know, we live in subdivisions, so it's, you know, we still have land. We're still sort of like, mm-hmm. I guess suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in the country, so it was a lot easier for me to like go off into a clearing and mm-hmm. do my thing. But now I can't do that. Like, you know, houses are all around me. It always feels like, you know, someone could be watching from a window or something. So it's sort of like a mixture of country and city. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you feel that way living in a subdivision.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, you feel exposed to your neighbors the way you would in a city. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have a little more natural surroundings.
Right, you still have the land and the trees. And, like, if you're, you know, an apartment in, you know, downtown, you're not going to necessarily have that.
Right. And, I mean, we could obviously plant gardens and grow herbs mm-hmm. and things like that. And I know a lot of city dwellers, the best they can do is, you know, a window box or a few potted plants.
I mean, like a rooftop garden, but you still got, you know, concrete underneath that. But anyway, there's definitely something to be said for, you know, what she was talking about, you know, evolving and, sort of just, the word has left me, aphasia.
Well, I mean, I know what you mean. Like, with the evolving thing, it's... There's a lot
adapting.
Of...
Adapting. That's what I was looking for. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go okay. ahead. Sorry.
Evolving and adapting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who... it sounds weird to say that, but it seems like there are folks who get really hung up on things being done exactly the way they were done 100 years ago, 150 years ago, 200 years ago.
Well, even we can get like that because we derive such pleasure from it. Like, we enjoy saying, oh, you know, this is how they did it. And like that... Because I think it gives you a connection to the past, and that's awesome because... You know, for people who feel that way, because I'm definitely one of them. But at the same time...
It's good to be open to understanding changing needs. Mm-hmm. And I think Stephanie made a really good point about that. You know, the things that you would have had access to 100, 150 years ago, some of them don't exist anymore.
Right.
You know, the Adam and Eve root are really, really hard to find. You know, and if you find them, you're going to be ordering them from a catalog or online.
Right. You're not going to go out and collect them.
No, that's just not very likely to happen. But, you know, we do have access to things now that we didn't have back then. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, the glass from broken windshields. Mm-hmm. You know, if people get into auto wrecks all the time. You know, and I'm not saying that you should, you know, be exploiting somebody's, you know, tragic, horrible accident for your benefit. But, you know, even just a small collision, you know, there's glass that gets swept to the side of the road. You collect that. You can use that for, you know, any work that needs, you know, sort of violent collision type style energy.
It has a certain energy attached to it. So
It remembers.
Harness it. Use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think there's a value to that. At the same time, like we were saying, you know, you can't forget the past. You can't just completely change. You can't rewrite history.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, you can't change the practices that were done in the past just because it's convenient. But you do need to be willing to adapt if you don't have an alternative, I think.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's a little rambling.
Or even if you do have an alternative, if you like the adapting, then go for it. Like, because that's what I like. I don't know if anybody remembers, but in the Hoodoo episode, we actually talk about how there's a little bit less room for... adapting like I was used to doing in witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd asked you about using, I think it was lodestones in a love spell since they attract or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was exactly.
I can't remember it exactly either.
But you, whatever it was, whatever I asked about, you know, you had said, well, they're not really used this way. I guess you could, but, you know, like, so I was under the impression that it was less adaptable. But after talking to her, I'm kind of... reconvinced, I guess.
Right. Well, but I think that the biggest thing there is that it is less adaptable. I think Hoodoo and Rootwork is less adaptable than modern Wicca is.
Mm-hmm.
Because modern Wicca has this sort of tables of correspondences thing going on where, you know, if you don't have this, you use this because it's on the table of correspondences. You don't necessarily have to put a lot of thought into that. Hoodoo, in order to make a substitution or a change, you really have to think about why you're changing it.
Right.
And that's the big thing for me, is if you're going to change a centuries-old practice, you need to think about why you're changing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's because you can't get any asafoetida, you know, where you are, then you need to think about, well, why did they use asafoetida in the first place in this spell?
Right. It's pretty much, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. You know, if you've got the resources to do it traditionally, do it traditionally. If you don't have the resources, then adapt as needed. And if you, you know, even if you do have the resources to do it traditionally, but you know that you'd rather do it slightly differently, as long as you can, it's sort of like a show your work thing.
Right.
as long as you can sort of show your reasoning for it to yourself, then I don't see why it wouldn't work.
Right.
I think there is a room for, there is room for adaptation.
Yeah.
But I think that it has to be changed with respect to.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, with respect Definitely. To tradition.
Okay, I really like that.
Yeah, you don't change because you can change it. You change it because it's necessary.
Change with respect. I like mm-hmm. that.
That's our slogan now. There will be t-shirts. There will be bumper stickers.
That's right.
All right.
So, is there anything else you want to say?
No, but you.
I think we're good. I think we touched on everything we want to talk about. So, I guess next up is our witchcraft and spelled out segments.
Yeah.
And,
sounds like a party.
That's right.
All right. It's rock and roll. It's witchcraft.
Thank you for that introduction. Okay, so witchcraft today is about buttons. And,
Button. Who's got the button?
That's right. Most people grow up, well, I guess in our generation, maybe not so much anymore, but, with, you know, like grandmothers who would sew and have like a button jar or a button box. And I have one myself. I love buttons. It's like a major component in my craft room. I'm always on the lookout for, you know, vintage buttons or whatever. And I was thinking about this segment and how I could incorporate buttons into it. So, and you know, how I could use them magically. So one thing that I came up with was, I guess it's sort of Coraline inspired.
Okay.
Is for closing, eyes, ears, or a mouth on a poppet or a doll. And this, you know, this could be for good or bad. Say you need someone to
stop spreading gossip.
Yeah. Or, you know, just not tell like a happy secret. Like say you're pregnant and mm-hmm. you don't want everybody to know, like, you know, you could do something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just sew the button on,
if you did like a poppet for an enemy that it wasn't that you were trying to hurt them, but like if you sewed up their eyes, their ears, and their mouth, then they would see no speak, no hear no evil about you.
Right. And they would just sort of look over you.
Exactly.
And you could be under their radar.
Exactly.
Which would be a good thing, especially yeah. like I'm imagining this in high school. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be a really kick-ass high school spell.
Yeah. Especially, I think especially if you could get their, like a button from them.
Yeah. To use as one of the, mm-hmm. use as the heart button or something.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting.
Or if you seal up their heart.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good necessarily, but.
What if you can seal up their butt? Make them constipated.
Oh, that's awful. But, you know, it's just playing off of, you know, like button your lip or button your mouth, so. Mm-hmm. Another one would be wearing it as a charm or a reminder. You know, you could put it like on a necklace or, you know, a little bracelet, maybe even on your keychain. And that could be for like a reminder for you. You know, if you're, mm-hmm. I know a lot of, like for example, I know Silver Ravenwolf talks about this and a lot of witches believe that to talk about your magic mm-hmm. lessens it. I know we've talked about that before, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially if you're new to the craft, that can be really hard. But, you know, you can sort of use it as a reminder, like, hey, I need to keep my mouth shut about that. Yeah. Or you can just use it for mundane things, like if you have foot and mouth disease and, you know, you're just bad about saying bad, you know, things at the wrong time.
Why, Lane, do you speak from experience?
I try not to do that, but, you know, everybody has their moments. So
yeah.
It's always good to have a visual reminder, and I think a button would be, you know,
mm-hmm.
good to do that with.
I wonder if, like, for every secret you were trying to keep, if, like, you started making, like, a necklace
cool
or a charm bracelet.
Yeah. Like
Although at some point, like, if somebody figured out that's what you were doing.
Or something that someone confided in you.
Uh-huh.
You know, to, like, maybe have them give you a button.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of Peter Pan.
No, but I totally get what you mean. Yeah. Because it seals, it's sort of like you're saying, okay, you know, you can trust me.
Right.
And here's this token of that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be pretty cool. But,
very cool.
And then something else that Corey and I were talking about would be a form of a plantable spell on someone.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you could get a button from their shirt or coat or something
mm-hmm.
And have a sewing kit with you. Mm-hmm. I know I usually do. And just be like, oh, you dropped this. Here, let me fix it for you. And I think you should talk about where you got the idea for this.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I don't know if anybody's seen this movie, but there was a movie that came out last year called Drag Me to Hell. which is directed by Sam Raimi, who did the Spider-Man movies and also did the Army of Darkness, Evil Dead movies.
Evil Dead, yeah.
So he does this really interesting combination of sort of horror and comedy. And this was totally a horror comedy. And in this movie, the main girl gets cursed with this demon called the Lamia, by this old gypsy woman. And the whole curse is put upon her after this, like, 5-minute long struggle against this gypsy woman who's trying to gum her to death with her toothless mouth.
Ew.
It's hysterical. Kind of gross. But at the end of it, at the end of the fight, the gypsy woman grabs a button off of the girl's coat, rips it off, speaks this curse to the button, and gives it back to her. And then she's cursed with this demon. Well, okay, so I'm thinking, you know, it's really easy to pop a button off of somebody.
Right.
It's you know, and you don't even have to pop a button off of them while they're wearing it. It can be off of their clothes, you know, if you happen to be going anywhere near their laundry or anything like that. Just pop a button off and inscribe it, and you can offer to sew it back on for them.
Yeah.
Or even sew it back on for them really quickly.
Yeah. Or, you know, you could do this for yourself as well. Like, you know, take a button off, you know, etch something on the back of it, perhaps. It'd be better, like, maybe on a coat with larger buttons. But, you know, and then sew it back on, and then you have that that symbol that's facing inward towards you, to you know, towards your body. It's very mundane. No one would ever know except you know, and that's the important part. So
right, and you've got this sort of programmed little energy button that is doing its thing, and nobody knows about it.
Right.
But I love it. I love that it's sort of this, like we said, the plantable spell. It's attachable to somebody.
Yeah.
And they carry it with them. So I like that.
So, very okay, cool. That's it for witchcraft. And up next, we'll have Spelled Out.
All right. So today on Spelled Out, sort of keeping in the vein of one, the urban witchery, urban hoodoo, urban magic that Stephanie talked about, and two, in Lane's vein of you know, shut your mouth kind of stuff, I am going to talk about the freezer spell. The freezer spell is something in hoodoo that comes out of spells that were done in the mostly, I guess, the 19th century, after there were a fair number of butcher shops established. And what these spells were originally they were cow tongue spells, or sometimes sheep's tongue spells, because you could go to the butcher shop and buy this tongue. And, you know, people cook and eat tongue, and people still cook and eat tongue, but it's a little harder to find.
Yeah, it is.
But what
I'd really know, because that idea really grosses me out.
All that tongue you're eating, well, that sounds dirty. Jeez. All right, moving on. So what they would do is they would take the tongue, and they would split it open, and they would take the name of the person that they wanted to shut up, the person who was spreading gossip, or who maybe, in some cases, was going to provide court testimony against them or something like that. So take that, and they would split this tongue open, and they would cram this in the tongue with a set of appropriate herbs. For example, in the court case situation, they might do galangal root and put that in there. They might also put in some, like, hot peppers and salt, things like that, to make it so it was very unpleasant if they did try to talk.
Right.
And then they would seal it back up with a series of steel pins. Usually it was, I think, 9 pins. It was fairly normal.
Sounds rough.
They would, do these pins through the tongue. And then they would have this tongue that was sealed up with the person's name inside of it and some herbs. And it would keep that person from talking about them. And I believe that they would deploy it by burying it on the person's property in that particular case.
Okay, so
then you move into the modern era. You know, we're really talking about the post-60s and 70s.
No more ice boxes, in other words.
Yeah, we've sort of gone past ice boxes at this point. And everybody has a freezer now. But not everybody has access to these cow tongues anymore, because it's just not as common. So people instead have sort of adapted this button my lip, shut up spell. So what they'll do is they'll take a poppet of the person. And they'll take a jar of oil or a jar of water, and they will put that in the poppet in the jar, and then put it in the freezer, at the back of the freezer, and leave it there. And you can also, the poppet will be stuffed with the herbs the same way that the tongue was stuffed.
Right.
And it has the name paper inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is it freezes their action completely. And if you think about it magically, it makes total sense because you're immobilizing that doll.
Mm-hmm.
You're making it so that they cannot do anything. And if you use a little calamus root in there, which is also called sweet flag, or some licorice, those are some controlling herbs. And if you add that in there, then what you're really doing is controlling their ability to harm you or hurt you in any way, including by speaking about you.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it's really interesting because you wind up with this piece of modern technology, which I know a lot of, you know, witchy folk have issues with using modern technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I can totally see why, because there's this sort of, it has this artificial barrier between right. you and the natural world, and the natural world is kind of where we think of as, you know, that's where witchcraft comes from.
Right.
But
which I can see as being valid, you know.
Absolutely. I can totally see that point. But at the same time, you know, you can use this piece of modern technology to perform witchcraft that doesn't necessarily take away from its potency.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're still basically just using the principle of freezing water. So you're still using a very natural power.
Right.
To do what you're trying to do. So, and I just think it's a neat spell.
Yeah.
So
now I've given you three different ways to shut someone up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if you're having that problem in your life, there's a remedy for you. So, anyway, so we hope that was entertaining and mm-hmm. useful for all of you. Like we said, we're really, really thankful to all of our listeners and all of our blog readers and commenters.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also really, really happy to be able to bring you episode 10 of New World Witchery. It's mm-hmm. amazing
yeah.
that we're already to 10.
Yeah.
It's kind of astounding.
Corey and I were talking earlier about how far we've come in just the 10 episodes.
Yeah. Like, you can hear a difference. And you know, if you're listening to episode 1 after you listen to this one, I'm sorry.
Well, not just the sound quality, but just our voices. Oh, me more so, just because I'm so nervous.
Me too. That first episode, I sound like, hello, welcome to movie phone. Yeah.
And I was so timid and shaky and, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not going to like me.
I know. And now our podcast is almost a teenager. Our podcast is a tween.
Oh, God. No makeup podcast.
No makeup and no dating boys.
I love how we've decided it's a girl.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway. So.
So, if you want to reach us, you can, of course, email us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
And, of course, there's always a blog, newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
And we always love hearing from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
We're lonely, desperate people.
So. Whose egos need feeding.
I know. Hungry, hungry egos. That really should be a board game, shouldn't it?
Yes.
Hungry, hungry egos. Anyway. But, as always, we're really happy to have you here at New World Witchery, and we hope you continue to listen to us, and thanks for listening.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music. Thanks for listening.